Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.
Good morning and welcome to Creative Conversation. Today we have Felicia Grant Preston. Hi, Felicia.
Hi.
And Felicia is going to talk about her title of her installation that she is doing for Art and Social Justice, Examining the State of Our Environment, The Shotgun Shack / House, A Family Affair from the Outside of the Track. Felicia, could you tell us something about, before you talk about your installation, first of all, can you talk about yourself and the trajectory of your own art practice?
Well, I have been an artist, or considering myself formerly an artist, for more than 30 years. As a child, I always drew, and I was encouraged by my teachers early in elementary school. I didn't know what it meant to be an artist then. They told me I should be an artist. But that put me on track to just try to find out what it was to be an artist. And from there, I went to school and learned how to use different materials and mediums, and always loved it. And it has always been a part of my life. I have been
Was your alumni? What school?
Oh, I started off at Southern Illinois University. My high school teacher also encouraged me to, one of my high school teachers, to go to the Art Institute. So I spent my first year at SIU. I went to the Art Institute 1 year, and I was not really very happy there. I ended up going back to SIU and finishing getting my degree. From there, I went on to graduate school at Northern Illinois University, another graduate school where I received a master's there. I went into another graduate program, but only just to get certification because I was a teacher, and they weren't hiring teachers in my area, so I went back in special ed. And after that, I've gone to other universities just to hone in and sharpen my skills. For instance, I went to Governor State because I took some printmaking at Northern, and I enjoyed printmaking, but I didn't have the materials and equipment to be able to do that. So I went to Governor State for a period of time, just so I could use the facilities and freshen up my skills in printmaking. I also went to Chicago State and received another degree, but that was in education administration. And for many years, I went to the Savannah College of Art and Design for educator conferences for several years, and picked up a lot of new and different skills, which I applied to my teaching as well as my own work.
You got another one there. You're really a lifetime learner, with all of the you're a lifetime learner and a lifetime educator. So, you know, a lot of artists. But in the meantime, while you were doing all that education, you were You're also a collector, and you're married.
Absolutely.
You have a family. You have adult two sons and a daughter, and they were part of your family affair from the other side of the track. So, you want to introduce your team that came in? You know, Felicia did a whole focus on the Shotgun Shack, but the whole thing and bringing your family in to the project?
Well, actually, I'm going to just step back for a second and say I am no longer married. I was married for 33 years. My husband is deceased. But he was very much a part of encouraging me to continue on, because it's not an easy thing to, and I know many female artists out there probably know and experience the same thing, how difficult it can be to work a full-time job, have husband, family, children, and still produce art. So it's like you're always doing a juggling act. But one of the things that I have to give my husband credit for, he was always very supportive. And that actually fed into our collecting, because, you know, all of the shows, my kids grew up going to art exhibitions and opening receptions. And, of course, you know, my husband was always there and being very supportive of that. And because, you know, we're both seeing so much art. Initially in our home, we had all of my work hanging as we were participating in all of these opening receptions, and I'm doing shows, and he got very encouraged by all the art, and we just appreciated, you know, the work of other artists. So we started slowly collecting, and eventually it became quite a large collection because there's so much wonderful artwork out here on the south side of Chicago, and so many wonderful artists that I've had the opportunity to exhibit with and enjoy their work.
And you also belong to a couple of art groups. You're with the collector. You're part of the Diaspora Rhythm.
That's
you guys
correct.
Were part of Diaspora Rhythm, and mm-hmm. you guys do the annual tours.
Yes. I actually became a part of Diaspora Rhythms because they were honoring particular artists they would do a show, and they would have social events to introduce the artist to the other members of the group. And my husband and I, after that, became members. We were so enthralled with the group and what they were doing, because their interest was in getting African-American art out there in the mainstream. And that was really important, because to step back a moment, when I was in undergrad and in graduate school, they didn't even talk about, in all the art history classes that I had to take, they didn't even talk about African-American artists. So at that point, I didn't even know what African-American artists, who they were, where they were in the country. There was very little said. The most I ever found out about is when I was in graduate school at Northern, I had an assistantship. And part of the time I had to spend working in my department. And I worked in the Sly Library, where the professors would come in and prepare their, they would come and prepare their lectures. And so I had to mount slides and file slides. So I never saw works of African-American artists. And the most I ever found was a list at one point. And ironically, the list was labeled minor artists. Minor art. And on that list was a list of African-American artists. Many of the names, or matter of fact, I don't think I knew any of the names at that time, perhaps one, maybe Dr. Margaret Burroughs, but many of the others I didn't even recognize, because that had not been a part of my educational experience. So I just wrote the list down, and as more information started coming out on African-American artists, books on African-American artists, which were few and far between at the time, I began to become familiar with a lot of the artists that were on that list and their work. And when my oldest son went to Hampton, it was the first time I had the opportunity to really see some of the major African-American artists in this country at the museum at Hampton University. And it was phenomenal. And along the way, a couple of shows at the Art Institute, Sharing Traditions, Five Black Artists in America. And there was another exhibition that came out of the shows that were in the in the African American colleges, HBCUs. So they did a show on those collections, and it was phenomenal. So I had to learn along the way as an artist who the artists were that came before me, who were the well-known African-American artists. And some of them, it took them many years to get recognition. And that a lot of that is still happening today. Now, getting to my team,
That's fun.
My oldest son.
Go ahead.
We knew early on that he was going to be a sculptor, because the first time we gave him clay at 2, and we always joked about the fact that he didn't eat it, he started making things.
Is that Renard or?
Dwayne.
Dwayne.
So he is a sculptor. Now, Renard's artistic ability came about very differently. He probably around in high school was very involved in the hip-hop movement, you know. And so he is he's still working at trying to really get his name out there. He has put out some music, and he has music online as Prez. And so he's a remarkable artist, and I'm hoping that he will be able to do a piece for us on Friday. We actually have a recording of it that we're going to be playing out of our shotgun house, but I would like for him to be able to do that live. Sierra has written poetry off and on over the years, never been published. However, she has always been interested artistically, because it's always, you know, being an artist and being immersed in the arts has always been was always a part of our household. So she was introduced early on to the arts, and so when the topic came up to do the, actually we didn't have a name for it when you first approached me about doing the installation. I decided to ask, first of all, my sons, who have been more involved in the arts over the years, if they were interested in participating, and they agreed. And then I have a friend who is a carpenter and has various other skills that in the building trades. He mentioned that Jihad El-Amin. He had been interested in doing something artistic, so I approached him with the idea, and he agreed. So Sierra Preston was the last one to come on board. I asked her, after I'd kind of gotten started telling them about what I was thinking about in terms of the project, and she agreed to come on. So it's myself, Dwayne Preston, Renard Preston, Jihad El-Amin, and Sierra Preston. So, the concept, and are we ready to move into that as well?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about
the
shotgun house and the tradition of the shotgun house.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, some artists may be familiar with how things come to you. You know, it's kind of like I've heard that before. Other people have had the same experience that I've had, where something just comes to you. It may be a small piece of an idea. It's almost like sometimes putting together a puzzle, you get a piece at a time, and when initially you get that first flash of inspiration, you may not know exactly where that's going to be, but then you just wait and it begins to come together in pieces. So my first idea was about the shotgun shack. Because for me, when I began to think about all of the things that are occurring, not only in this city, but around the country as well, I began to see that a lot of that is connected to race and to poverty. And over the years, now, my general practice, I started off doing a lot of representational work, and then I realized what I really loved to do was work with color and texture. And that became my primary means of working. But also one of the things I recognized, and this started many years ago as well, that when there was something pressing, some kind of social issue that was pressing me at the time, then I would step away and break away and do something different addressing that. Like one of the pieces I have in this show is called Die for America. And that piece was created because we've had many African American men go off to war only to come back to this country and be persecuted, sometimes lynched, beaten, and other atrocities while, you know, after serving this country. One of the other pieces I put in was 2 + 2 equal forgotten. And that one was a show that it started off with a theme and it was about puberty rights. But for me, because I grew up during the civil rights era, and so I was well familiar with rights denied. So that piece addressed rights denied. So I could not go approach it the same way many of the other artists. And it was a show that was multicultural, but probably with fewer African Americans participating in the show. So for me, it just took a different turn, because when I think about rights, of course, you know, first thing for me was rights denied. So getting back to the Shotgun House, that was just another flash of inspiration. That was the first thing that came to me, because it, for me, it's a symbol of poverty. And as you well know, we've in our community, we have struggled with poverty since slavery, and moving forward, when you think in terms of the you know, the unemployment rate that still exists in this country, and the unemployment rate of African Americans in this country. So that became my initial theme, and I began to talk to my team about it, and they came up with different concepts and different ideas to feed into that. Like, for instance, Jihad El-Amin said that he wanted to incorporate some music, and the first thing he thought of was a song by B.B. King, Everybody Wants to Know Why I Sing the Blues. And Renard said that he also had a song that he had written that he felt fit appropriately. Sierra then ventured out to write a particular poem, and we began to put it together. Now, Jihad, being a carpenter, when we came up with the concept, you know, I went through and researched shotgun houses, and we began to formulate a plan. EI and Dwayne mostly began to formulate the plan on how we were going to put together the shotgun house. Now, Jihad is an excellent carpenter, so his skills in carpentry really did a lot to pull it together. In the meantime, we also talked about things that were happening in the environment, in the country, in this city that we felt strongly about. Some of that being the economic situation, black-on-black crime, the shooting of of black men by the police department, like, of course, Laquan McDonald. And also, the same thing, Sandra Bland also. So it's not just about black men, but mostly, you know, it has occurred with black men, but black women too, because we also talked about the issue of Sandra Bland. And that still is a mystery that they're trying to solve, you know, the whole situation behind that. But anyway, so a lot of the House began to, the idea of taking different headlines, different words, different things we wanted to say and applying them to the Shotgun House. So it's a story in an essence that can be read through looking at the house itself. And then, of course, there is Why Me movement as well, which I'm affected by personally.
So you have a clothesline as part of this installation with little clothes on it, and which I thought was really interesting how you hung issues on the clothesline outside of the Shotgun House and its placement in the space. Your installation in the Shotgun House could be seen in the window as people walk by. We're there on State Street at 3619 South State Street in Bronzeville. And so there's people and students, you know, young people walk by and I see them peer into the window. And it's really interesting how they take a quick look at the house, which is a model for something that could be a lot larger in the future. The first time I saw your social justice work was during the Delta exhibition when you did these small, I think they were 9x10s, 8x10s, shadow boxes. And a couple of those pieces are in your installation at the Overton Hygienic Building.
Yes, those were, I was really struggling with the whole concept at that time of, like I said, some of the police shootings and black-on-black crime and the Black Lives Matter movement. And so, like I said, sometimes when something is pressing on me, pressing on my heart, my soul, my spirit, I feel the need to break away from some of what I have been doing and give some attention to that. Because, like I said, I haven't done a lot of it, but over the years, it comes out of different situations, like I said, it pressed on my heart. And that I approach from different points of view. Now, there again, you know, came this idea came about just the same way it usually does, you know, parts of a puzzle that come together. And I went on a tour, Diaspora Rhythms went on a tour of an artist studio, and he's a furniture maker, and he had these boxes that were stacked up where they used to have a contract to do cigar boxes. And I just looked at the box, and for me, I saw a frame. I didn't know what I was going to do with it at the time, but when I get a flash of information like that where I'm to pick up a piece of, you know, sometimes I may work with odd materials. A lot of artists do pick up found materials and things like that. I may not know on the front end what I'm supposed to do with it. So I just bring it into the studio because I know eventually the rest of the information will come. So I started by bringing that piece, one box in, and then I began to get ideas about staining them and putting work in them. There again, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. There again, I started clipping out words and images and things that that struck a chord in me. And, you know, so I went back and got more boxes. I stained them all. And at the time, my mother was declining in health and shortly after made her transition. So it's interesting how that body of work came together very quickly, but not by chance, but by prayer, because I had a short timeline between Gallery DST and actually completing the work. And so I just had all of these things cut up and started getting other little things to go inside of the boxes and laid them all out on the table in my studio. And it was almost like magic, because as I walked around the table, I put different things in different boxes and it just started coming together. And each one approached Black Lives Matter from different points of view. From the point of view of
police. Well, I know
police.
That they were a hot item, because when I came to the exhibition, they were hot. They were moving off that wall. You know, your sisters and other patrons that came to that exhibition were really, you know, buying them and wanting them in their collections. So, you know, that prayer, and like a lot of times people don't understand the amount of spiritual time that artists spend in front of their work with the meditation and the thought of purpose. And we're not just abstractly going at work and, you know, incidentally going at work. We are doing things on a higher plane, and that's what brings people in to look at, you know, our work and, you know, when they want to just have it. So we're going to move into there's a phrase that I coined is tactical urbanism, and this is kind of like the second Phantom Gallery project you've done. I know we've done some things with Sapphire and Crystal where you've invited me into those exhibitions, you know, and then when I at one time we talked and you had wanted to do a Phantom project, and you when this opportunity came about for us to do a show, you just really, with all the things that you're going on with your own life as, you know, a primary caregiver for your father, you know, a lot of us at this age, we're in our whatever decade we're in, we find ourselves as caregivers for our elderly parents. And so you're really taking care of your dad right now, but you found this as an opportunity to what I call, you know, getting into a space and creating, and it's about the process of what you do. So can you tell me some of the unanticipated impacts of creating this body of work? And then the last question that I wanted you to address is tactical urbanism. You know, you were kind of like, I don't know what that means, but a lot of this is what we do on the grassroots level beyond the gallery practice. You know, could you kind of comment on that? We have a few minutes left.
Well, like I said, you know, because I'm doing a lot of caregiving, I'm looking at the news quite frequently, and being, like I said, immersed in this country affairs, world affairs, and things like that, and you know, you begin to feel that that perhaps that there's, you know, even if you can't get out there and out there in the streets with protesters and things like that, you know, you begin to feel like perhaps there's something that I can do, some way that I can address it and be a part of what's going on out there, and on the positive side, because we know that there's a lot of negativity going on in this country, and it's starting at the top, if you know what I mean. And, you know, trying to find ways to address it in the way that we can address it with our own time limitations and our own personal limitations. I have a tendency to, because I'm there, be away from my studio for a bit of time.
This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.